This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 130.
And I did net just slightly above $1 million.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com. Your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. Birthday Boy himself, a big fat giant, 30 years old. That's right. He's 30, ladies and gentlemen. He's finally growing up. The man, the myth. Yeah, he's a myth. It's Brandon Turner. What up, B?
What up? Do I sound older and wiser?
You still sound like a petulant little child.
Well, that is because I'm still 29, because we were recording this a few days before my birthday, this intro. We recorded the interview, a month and a half ago with Will. Yep. But my birthday is in a couple days, and I'm going to be the big 3-0, which means I get 30 spankings. Do you remember that? Like when you're a kid?
I don't remember that, yeah, but like, and your wife do for fun. That's usually our third question. This is not really an interview about you, but if that's what you're into, it's cool. I'm not going to judge you, Brandon. It's,
30 Shades of Grey. Good. 30 Shades of Grey. It's all right.
Yeah. Do what you got to do, brother. I mean, whatever makes you happy. And listen, you seem to be pretty happy. So
I'm a happy guy. Heather. Pinch to grow an inch and a sock to grow a block. Isn't that?
I don't know what you're
saying.
That's
what everyone says. That is like a thing, right? Happy birthday and a pinch to grow an inch.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. That might be it's a Minnesota thing. Anyway.
So what else? Happy birthday. Things are good, man. It's summer's going well and it's your birthday and listen, I'm happy to have you here on this very important day
very important. They should make it a national holiday, really.
They might, because you are that important an individual.
I don't want to say it, but since you brought it up, I am.
All right, enough about you. Let's get into the show, man. We got a cool show today with one of our prior guests. And so before we go there, let's get today's quick tip.
Today's quick tip is, it actually comes from Grant Cardone's book, The 10X Rule, which I did not know when I started this process, but it totally makes sense now. The idea of setting big goals. And here's why I bring that up. When I was like 21, I read a book called $1 Million by 30 by a guy named Alan Corey, who's a real estate investor down in Atlanta. If you're listening, Alan, what's up? Because I know he listens to the show. Anyway, read his book when I was like 21, 22, and it was called $1 Million by 30. And I said, that's my goal, $1 Million by 30. And so I set this monstrous goal. And I don't think I quite hit it unless I want to be really, really liberal with my property values on what they're worth. And maybe if the market heated up a little more, I could push it. But anyway, the point was, even if I didn't make my goal, I got close to my goal, maybe, or even partway to my goal, doesn't matter. The point is, I had a big goal. I worked towards that goal. And even if I didn't hit the goal itself, I'm still way further than I would have been had I not set that monster goal to start with. So the quick tip today was, no matter where you are, go set a monstrous goal and then work towards achieving that goal. Even if you don't hit it, if you fall short, if you fail at that goal, you're probably better off.
I love it. The not so quick tip,
but it's important, I think.
Yeah, no, I think maybe. It's great. Listen, you're getting old and you tend to ramble when you get older.
That is so what happens.
That's what just happened to you. It was awesome.
Yeah, I got my walker now. I've been using, because now I'm 30, it's geriatrics and all that.
Right, right. Yeah, you are pissing off more and more of our audience every single day. I'm glad that it's not me anymore. It's a beautiful thing.
I'll take one for the team.
There you go.
Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder Dave Van Horn wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Hold on, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single-family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
All right, let's get to the show. We've got a guy today that was one of our earliest interviewees, and his show was all about flipping luxury real estate. And today we're going to actually talk about how this guy went and did a $1 million flip. And then he's got 10 amazing tips for you guys on how to make $1 million in real estate. So let's welcome Will Bernard, who's been one of the most active members of the Bigger Pockets community for the past probably half a decade, if not longer. It's really great to have him back. So let's get to this. Will, welcome back to the show, man. It's great to have you.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. It's been a while. What show were you on the last one? It was in the 20s, right?
I think it was like 30, 32, something right around there.
Okay.
It's been a long time, actually.
It has been a long time.
Long time.
100 shows. Oh, we should have probably had you on like the 100th, after episode, but whatever. This is 130, which you can get to the show notes, people, at biggerpockets.com/show130.
There you go.
Check out all the notes and you can leave Will messages and comments and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Right. Well, Will, so you're back. It's been a while. And really quickly, we've got kind of a different show today. And before we get into it, what have you been doing the last year? What's been going on?
Pretty much more of the same. Just been renovating homes and flipping them. I'm in the luxury market, so I'm flipping multi-million-dollar homes. I've been continuing to do that. I am looking this year to make a switch back and start doing the, under 100,000 flips again. I need to keep that rolling. I kind of got away from that for one reason or another, and I'd like to get back into that. And although the competition is fierce there and the profit margins are slimmer, I'll make that up in quantity. And with my experience, I've got ways to make it work.
Nice.
And you're in Southern California, right?
I am in sunny Southern California.
Nice.
Jealous.
Nice. Yeah.
As you should be. We have the best weather in the world.
It's miserable here. It's raining. Denver's supposed to have 300 days of sunshine, and we're sitting here in like 2 weeks of rain. It feels like Brandon.
Yeah, where it's we awesome. Have 300 days of rain every year.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah,
you don't know what sun is, do you, Brandon?
I don't. I heard about it one time. I saw it like through the clouds, and everyone was like, "That's the sun." And I was like, "I thought they were talking about it." Like I had a sun, and I was confused, and it just got weird. And
sweet. All right, man.
So you can get confused there.
Hey, Will. So let's get back to this because we'll just start BSing. Last time we talked about this famous seven-figure flip. if that puppy isn't done by now, I don't know what the hell's happening. So the seven figure flip, what's the story, man? Is it done? What are the final numbers? Give us, you know, the lowdown.
Sure. Well, I had a thread on Bigger Pockets and it was called Seven Figure Success Stories. And I started out, it was a purchase of a large 7,200 square foot home with about 8 acres horse property. It was in Agoura Hills, California. And when it was all said and done, that actually closed and sold last April. So we're just over a year since I closed that and got paid. And I did net just slightly above $1 million.
Wow.
So it was my best deal ever by far.
Wow. How long did it take you beginning to end?
Beginning to end, I think it was, well, depends on what you call the beginning.
Okay.
The beginning, as far as when I closed escrow on purchase to when I sold it, it was about 18 months. I've checked the records on that. It was a long time, but it was a huge project. Before that, though, it was like a year and a half in the process of getting the original contract to actually close because I had so many problems with the seller, which was a bank.
And we talked about that, I think, a lot on the previous podcast. So you did end up netting $1 million. That's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, I can't complain.
I know my best flip ever was like, I don't know, 30,000 or something like that, maybe. Yeah. So you're doing a little bit more than I'm doing. That's good. And that's actually why we wanted to bring you on the show today.
Exactly.
Because I want to pick your brain. I mean, like, as I'm kind of getting a little bit more back into the flipping mindset, I kind of went away the last couple of years and did a lot of rentals. So today I'm being completely selfish and I want to pick your brain on how to be successful at flipping houses.
And it's all about you.
It's all about me. So that's why I do this show, is just so I can become a better investor. And, you know, that's
nice.
It. Yeah,
fair enough. Happy to help.
All right, so I asked you to prepare 10 like things to become a better flipper, and hopefully you at least grabbed a few of those, or maybe you can come up with them on the top of your head if you didn't. And we're just going to go through 10 different ways, or whatever we want to call it, 10 tips for being a successful flipper. Is that cool with you guys?
Absolutely.
Let's do it. All right.
So number one, what do you got?
Number one,
or 10. Are we counting backwards or forward, or does it not matter?
Let's start from the beginning.
Okay.
Going forward. So number one, know your market.
Know your market.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Why is that important, Will?
Well, let me explain what know your market means, first of all. Please. Knowing your market, there's a lot that encompasses that. First and foremost, you have to know the areas. So you got to know what streets are bad, what neighborhoods are bad, what neighborhoods are good, what neighborhoods are selling, and what neighborhoods are sitting. That only comes from whether, in my case, when I first started flipping, I was flipping in an area where I was born and raised and grew up. So I knew every street. I knew half the people in the city. It was easy for me. If you don't know that, you've got to get out there and drive neighborhoods. You've got to do research. And just looking on the internet isn't enough. You really got to put boots on the ground to know your market. Secondly, inventory levels. That's of vital importance. You need to know what is actively listed on the market for sale today. You need, of those active listings, you need to know what are REOs, what are short sales, and what are standard sales and probates. And then you need to know what those inventory levels were 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 12 months ago. So you have something to compare to. And by analyzing all that, you can see where the market is going.
And how do I find that? If I'm not I'm not a real estate agent, so how do I find that data about my market? Like how many properties are on the market and all that? How do I get that data?
Leverage other people, and that would be your real estate agent. So if you're not an agent, get your agent who's on your team to pull that data for you, and they should be feeding that to you every 3 months.
Gotcha. Cool. Now you said kind of driving the neighborhood. So is that what people are calling driving for dollars? Is that the just cruise around and look at houses and figure it out?
Well, driving for dollars is a little different in that you're driving neighborhoods, so you are accomplishing what I'm talking about, but that more specifically is driving neighborhoods looking for vacant houses or houses where the weeds are growing 15 feet high in the front yard. You pretty much know it's vacant. You're going to want to send a letter to the owner and then see if you can purchase it. That's driving for dollars to try and find leads on deals.
Gotcha.
In doing so, while you're driving around for dollars, absolutely, you should be going in these areas and looking at these houses, seeing what neighborhoods are looking good. If you're on one street, you see a bunch of hoods sitting there drinking 40s on the stoop, you may want to stay away from that street.
And unless you want to flip that house, right?
Well, if you want to flip that house, that's fine. But the problem is who's going to want to buy that? You're going to have a lower buyer's pool trying to sell to a buyer who doesn't want to live next to you know, a bunch of hoods. So that's why you want to buy in good neighborhoods when you're flipping.
I mean, they may want to. They may be drug dealers that, you know, are looking for suppliers and, you know, there's buyers everywhere, right? You know, everyone's I'm just giving you a hard time. No, that's great. So the key is get out there, explore, get to know the neighborhoods. And by doing that, it almost becomes automatic. You know, you can see a property and know kind of what it's worth, right?
Yeah, exactly. Once you know your neighborhoods, you walk in, you kind of know, okay, this area, this 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1,500 square foot house, you know, this one's worth $400,000. And if you're in this area, it's worth $600,000. If you're in this area, it's worth $250,000. So it's knowing those areas. And even more importantly than that, there's really specific information. For instance, in one of my cities, I know that if I'm on the left side of this one boulevard or just north of this boulevard, I'm going to pull higher price points than I was if I'm on the south side or on the west, east side of these other two boulevards. So, I mean, literally the two houses could be an eighth of a mile apart. And so anyone who didn't know the area looking on Zillow or just looking on the map can see, oh, okay, that's same size house, same area, that's a comp. But in reality, because I know that neighborhood and one is on one side of the boulevard, one's on the other, I know that one's going to be higher priced than the other. That's where knowing your market really comes into play.
Yeah, for sure. I'm selling my house right now, and the neighborhood I'm in is literally, I think it's like 6 blocks by 4 blocks. And so that's one neighborhood. You cross over one street, one direction, another street in another direction, and you're in a completely different price point. And the same goes on the other way. And to an outsider, you'd have no idea. You'd look and say, right, oh, you know, all the houses look the same. Well, you know, you cross this side of the boulevard, you're in a better school district. You know, it's not, there's nothing wrong with the street. There's nothing. It's just the school district. Well, that school district is commanding more money, so the houses are higher priced. The other way, it's, you know, it's a dividing line where proximity to a specific park is. And so you cross that line. Now you're closer to that park in a different neighborhood, even though it's the exact same neighborhood, and the price changes. So yeah, I mean, and you know, that's one of the reasons everybody gives me grief. And, you know, I'm out here always talking smack about places like Detroit and I don't know, Toledo. Let's get some other enemies. But you know, the reason is you can't possibly know those dividing lines. You can't possibly understand those neighborhood divisions from far away without really getting down and dirty and walking or driving, or at least, you know, doing a lot of homework and evaluating the neighborhoods. Am I right?
That's correct. And that's why I always suggest don't try and flip from afar. I mean, if you can buy and hold from afar, is difficult enough. Trying to flip from afar, you're really, really asking for trouble. I mean, unless you have a partner with boots on the ground, you can do that. Certainly.
Yeah.
You have to have somebody with boots on the ground doing that work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's smart. Smart. Moving on. Let's go on to number two. Number two, what do you got for us?
Number two is build your team and have it in place before you buy. And your team is going to be consistent of your escrow company, title company, insurance agent, attorney. Got to have a real estate attorney. If you don't, you're trying to cut corners and it's going to cost you more in the future. So definitely have that. And of course, the highly important part is your contracting team. So all your contractors and your subcontractors, have these guys in place before you start buying. Because if you buy and then you start shopping around, you might need to close and not have your team filled in, and time's your enemy. So if you start wasting time, you're eating up profits.
Yeah. I just did that actually on the house that I'm renovating right now. You know, I bought the thing and it was kind of a drama to buy it. And there's a whole longer story that I'm not going to get into now. But by the time I finally got it, like, I realized I never got a contractor lined up beforehand. And like, I knew I was supposed to, but I was just so busy with everything else. You're trying to, you know, rehab a house or whatever. I just didn't do it. And so now I'm looking at it, I'm like, it put me a good week and a half behind schedule. And then the first contractor ended up being terrible that I hired. So I had to fire that guy. And now I got a second guy in there. And now I'm way behind schedule now. And there's all those things you got to remember to do. And especially now this one's going to be a rental in the end. And so, I'm not as needing to, you know, I'm not like holding hard money on this property or anything like that. But still, like, it's 2 weeks or whatever of this property that I lost, and that's still holding costs on that and everything else. So,
right. And in the flipping world, I mean, time is of vital importance. And you're flipping a house like mine where you have close to $30,000 a month in holding costs. That week is going to cost you, you know, $7,000. There goes $7,000 just for wasting that week. So if I buy $7,000.
Yeah. Can I ask you about your contractors? Like, what kind of contractors are you getting? I mean, you know, like, there's like Jay Scott once, I think he wrote in the book on flipping houses, or maybe it was on BP. Anyway, there's like three levels of contractors. He divides them in, you know, there's the under the table kind of crappy guys, then there's the middle guys, and there's the high end. You kind of go by those categories as well. Do you define them a little differently, or who are you working with?
I don't really have a defining point of that level, but what I do work with is I have a general contractor that I will go to, and I've gone through a multitude of general contractors, believe me. And then mostly, though, I have my own team, so I have a bunch of subs. So I have my own tile guy, my carpet installer, you know, my painting crew, my landscaping crew, et cetera, et cetera. So I have all these individual crews, and then I also have backups too. So like if my one drywalling guy is busy another job site and I need him this week, then I'll call my backup drywall guy. So I have all of these subs, and I act as the GC, as the owner builder of the property, and then I go from there. That's and great. having the main subs and then your backup subs is important. And if you don't have the backup subs, that's okay when you're first starting out, because it takes time to get these guys. But you're over time, you're going to have backups, and you're going to have to get rid of and exchange one for another, because somebody's going to screw you or someone's going to mess up, and you're going to have to fire them.
Hey, so what's your best tip for finding these guys? I think we talk about it anytime we talk to somebody who's doing flips, but you know, I think one of the hardest things on the planet is to find a quality contractor. So any tips we can get are always going to help. And even if it's one that you gave us last time, you know, we're all about it. So what's your best tip on finding, you know, high quality contractors?
My best is probably going to be referrals. Of course, there's a little bit of problem there, because if I have an excellent contractor, I'm not going to just give them out to you, Brandon, yep, because then he's going to be on your job site when I need him. I don't want to give my good guys away. So there's a little problem there when you go to another investor asking him for his guys. Now, that being the case, there are some bigger like GCs that have crews where they can do your project and my project, and that's not a problem. But as far as the individuals hiring the subs, man, those little word of mouth, hey, can you give me a drywall, or can you give me a painter, or whatever, asking for referrals and talking to others. I've talked to real estate agents for referrals. I've talked to other contractors. I've bumped into people at Home Depot and Lowe's. That's always a good place to find some contractors, because they're buying gear, buying equipment and materials. Jay Scott always made a comment one time saying that a good place to get them is to go there in the morning, because that's when the hustle guys are there. If you're going there in the afternoon, maybe those guys aren't hustling. Now, that you could have a guy coming right back because, you know, they missed something, they ran short on something. So it doesn't mean he's there in the afternoon that he's no good. But generally speaking, that was his principle.
Nice, yeah. Nice. And really quick, I'm going to plug the book Jay Scott wrote, which is the book on flipping houses. And we also have the companion book, the book on estimating rehab costs, Bigger Pockets published. You could check them out at biggerpockets.com/flippingbook. Get more information on those there. All right, Will, so we've got our team. We know our market. What's our next point here?
Okay, so tip three would be become an excellent negotiator. Everything you do in the real estate field, everything pretty much is a negotiation. From negotiating with the real estate agents to get the commission from 6 to 5 or 4.5, to negotiating the property itself, getting the asking price from $300,000 down to $250,000, to contractors negotiating with them and getting their prices down, or getting their timelines speed up. Everything is a negotiation. And if you're not good at it, you're going to not make as much money. That's the bottom line. So you have to learn to be
good. How do you get good at it?
Practice is one, obviously. Two, reading books on negotiations are key, because they'll give you a lot of insight and a lot of good ideas from people who have been down that road. And you can take their experiences and then apply them in your own world.
Cool. Gotcha. And so, I mean, do you have any favorite books that you'd recommend on negotiation for anyone listening?
Well, I've always recommended Donald Trump's attorney, Mr. Ross. He wrote a book on negotiations, I forget the title of it. I actually have it here. Let me see.
That's a George Ross something.
Yeah, George Ross, Trump style negotiations.
Okay. Okay, cool. Any others that stand out to you?
Not really. That's the first one I read, and that's the one that really got me going. And then talking to other people, one of my real estate agents, a good friend of mine, he's just a really phenomenal negotiator. And I've sat in rooms and listened to him talk on the phone, listened to him talk live with other people. And listening to other people negotiate is very helpful. Good real estate agents are good negotiators. Not only do they negotiate with the other party, but they negotiate with you. They try and calm you down when the other party's firing you up and you're about to, you know, murder somebody because they're being a pain in the ass in the transaction.
Whoa, slow down, man. Did you just admit, you know, there's only a couple hundred police listening. It's okay.
I didn't say anything specifically, Josh. You can't prove anything.
Oh, jeez. Nice. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, you know, a good agent is absolutely going to do that. And you know, the funny thing is I think a lot of new people think, hey, when I, you know, get further in my career and I've done, you know, lots and lots of deals, that, you know, I don't need an agent anymore. Well, I will tell you, an agent down the line is just as valuable for that very reason. You know, no matter how many deals that you've done, you still have emotion, period. And you know, if you can count on somebody else being there to kind of help you, you know, keep the emotion out of it, keep you calm, keeping your eye on the ball, you know, I think a good real estate agent's really going to be an important partner, no matter what you do. And you know, I just, you know, I strongly recommend people be good to their agents when they find a good one, because, you know, good agent's going to really, you know, help you out. They're going to help find you deals, and they're really going to do exactly what you said. Keep you calm. They get to know you. I mean, I know, Brandon, your agent sends you text messages. You guys close contracts via text. I mean, you don't even have to communicate anymore, right?
Yeah. We do a lot via text and email. I don't talk to them that much, which is nice. Like, we just do it quickly throughout the day.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. That's awesome. Well,
a lot of people, I will say, it is a good idea to get your real estate license, but not so much so that you can, you know, list your own properties, although that's an advantage, but more so that it gives you a lot of the tools and the resources and the ability to, at acquisition, maybe feed somebody a referral fee or get a referral fee. Extra income is huge. All the access is huge. So I definitely recommend having a license. But as far as like listing your own properties and selling them, particularly when you're doing properties like mine, I just don't have the time, the resources, the ability to do what they do. My time is better spent going out, managing the project, finding the deals, contracting them, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm leveraging other people's time. So I'm going to leverage my agent's time and have him do that job.
Hey, Will, what was the best negotiation you've ever had? You know, for you, you know, whether it was price or, you know, well, usually that's pretty much what we're talking about, but, you know, whether it was a contractor or on an offer, what was like your biggest negotiation win?
I've had quite a few of them, but I'd have to say one of my most recent ones was about a year and a half ago. I had a property that I'm actually in escrow and on the sale right now, but when I was negotiating, they were asking $3.7 million for the property. I negotiated down to $2.7 million. So I got them down $1 million, which was huge. But more importantly, I got them to carry an owner finance note for $2 million. And then when we went into escrow, I had all my documentation in order, and the seller tried to pull a chandelier out of the property, which is attached as part of the property. Ooh. He tried to pull a statue from the property. He tried to pull a tractor that was in the paperwork from the property. And what I was able to do is I negotiated to have the agent pay me for that chandelier. I negotiated to have him give me $10,000 credit for that statue he took. I had him return the tractor. And on top of that, they had a termite report, and it had about $10,000-$12,000 worth of items on it for repairs, of which cost me maybe a couple, $2,000-$3,000 to fix myself. I got a credit for the whole thing and then saved all that money. So all these credits and all these negotiations into one really added up and helped tremendously.
So yeah, how do you do that? I mean, you know, how do you get somebody down $1 million? What was your leverage? I mean, how'd you do it?
It was a back and forth with a number of counters. I started at like 2.3. So I was at $1.5 million under what he was asking. I went back and said, hey, here's where I'm coming up with this pricing. And I'm trying to give evidence to establish why I'm at the price I'm at. And then we got up to a certain point and he finally came down to a certain point. I was trying to actually get it for 2.5. And the reason I settled on 2.7 was because he carried the note for 2 million at 6% interest. Instead of me paying 10 or 12 over a year and a half's period, I just saved over $200,000. So I'm actually in the plus by paying $200,000 more, giving him what he thinks he wants, and yet still having the net result be the same for me.
It's brilliant. Really, really smart.
Love it. Love it. All right. We could probably spend a whole show on just negotiation and we probably should someday, but let's move on to number four.
Okay. Probably one of the most important and my favorite, I preach this all the time, is know your numbers inside and out. And that those numbers are knowing how to calculate your ARV and how to calculate your renovation costs. If you don't know those two numbers, you will fail. There's an it's impossible to make an offer without knowing those two numbers.
So what is ARV? What is that and how does it work?
So your ARV is your after repair value. That's what you're going to your anticipated sale price of the property. So if you're looking at a house and they're asking $200,000 for it, you have to know that after you renovate it, that there's comps supporting that it could sell for X amount of dollars, let's say $300,000. So if you're going to buy it for $200,000 and your estimated ARV is $300,000, and then you know your repairs are $25,000, you're all in for $225,000, you sell for $3,000, you have a $75,000 gross spread. You have to know that you have a big enough gross spread to account for your acquisition costs, your holding costs, your resale costs.
Do you use any of those, like, 70% rule or anything like that when you're doing numbers?
Absolutely. I know a lot of people are not fans of rules. And again, people need to realize that these are not rules. They are guidelines or rules of thumb. They're not set in stone and they are not silver bullets. So, and what works for me in my market may not work for Josh and his or you and yours, Brandon. Or it may not even work in my market next week or next month. So you always have to change and adapt. I use the 70% rule and a variation of that. It's usually the 75% rule depending on what properties I'm talking about. But I use it. It is not an end-all be-all. It's just one tool in my toolbox.
Can you explain real quick what it is for those people who don't know?
Sure. So the 70% rule says that your acquisition price, let's say 175, and your rehab cost of 25, so you're all in for 200, that is 70% of the ARV.
Okay.
So I mean, another way of saying it would be you take your after repair, you multiply it times 0.7, and then you subtract out your cost of repairs, correct?
Correct. Same way to get to that. Yep. You're getting the same number.
Right on. Cool. And yeah, and that's why it makes sense, like, on a property, like if I'm going to go in my area, my average purchase price is, I don't know, let's say $100,000 after repair value. And I would do 70% on that. And then let's say I needed $20,000 worth of work. That might work out okay. But now let's say that after repair value was 50,000. 70% of 50,000 leaves no room for spread.
No room. Now you got to use the 65 or the 60% rule.
Exactly. Yep.
And just the same, 70% is a little tight on 100. I've always said that if you're over 125, you're okay at 70% typically all day long, unless you make some major other mistake.
Yep.
But typically, if you use a 70% rule and your exit value is 125 and above, you're okay. Now, again, if you're going to get into a $2 million, then you can't use the 75 or the 80% rule. You just can't. But if you're in that $300,000 to $400,000, you can buy, if you're good enough, you can buy at 80 cents on the dollar and still make a decent profit if you're doing enough quantity.
Yep.
And you have the right teams.
Right on.
So again, those rules are valuable, but they're not the, okay, yes, I'm going to buy because it hits the 75% rule. It's no, it hits the 75% rule. So check box one. Now I want to check my cash on cash. Check box two. Now I want to check my, internal rate of return. I want to check all of these math figures and make sure they're all hitting my targets.
Right on. All right, Will.
Love it.
Number five, it's about leverage. What's the tip?
Using financial leverage wisely. A lot of people are going to want to use leverage, of course, but you have to use it responsibly. If you over leverage, I see so many investors getting themselves in trouble. I'm just helping somebody on BP who made a loan to somebody. I will keep the names off for privacy purposes, of course. But they made a loan in third position to a rehabber who took down an acquisition with a hard money loan, took a large second out, probably to finalize the acquisition. So he's got 100% financing. Then he'd take a third loan out from this poor guy to probably do his rehab. And now the house is sitting there. He's upside down. And this guy's in trouble. So this investor over-leveraged. And you just can't do that. So you have to use leverage responsibly.
Yeah. And when you say leverage, you're essentially talking about loans, right? I mean, like, this is the idea of getting a mortgage on something and not going crazy with the mortgages, right?
Correct. Yeah. Leverage is borrowing money. And borrowing money can be from conventional financing through banks. You can go private money, people you know, accountants, family, friends who don't have time to flip, don't want to flip, and want other options other than the stock market so they can invest in your projects. Those are private money lenders. And then you can go as far as hard money lenders, where that's their business, is to make loans to rehabbers, and they're going to charge more interest. They're going to charge points and fees. It's going to be more expensive. And there lies the problem. So if you're going to utilize hard money lenders, make sure that you have enough spread and that you get in and out quick, because time's your enemy.
Yeah.
Hey, Will, so you made $1 million on this flip. And we're talking about leverage. I think a question that a lot of people are wondering, you know, you probably have had some cash, you know, sitting around. Now, are you still going out there and finding lenders to help you finance your projects? Or are you paying cash for them now? You know, what's the advantage to both for you?
I am absolutely and still utilizing private money lenders to leverage every one of my deals. So when I first started, I actually leveraged 100% of the acquisition and almost 100% of my rehab on my first California flip that I did. But I got it at such a great deal, and in the market was so perfect in the timing, it was safe. So I had a huge amount of equity how I bought it, and I had buyers lined up when I sold it. So it was safe. As I built up capital, then I borrowed money from private money lenders and combine that with my own money so that I can keep that loan to value low and keep those lenders safe.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I love it. One thing that illustrates a lot that I say a lot, I think it's in, like, I say it all the time, but the idea that, like, creative investing is not about being broke, right? Like, trying to get loans and, like, you know, I wrote that book on No One Low Money Down, right? There's my plug. Right. But so in that book, a lot of people look at that. They think it's like, you know, it's that concept of creative investing for people who are broke or completely out of money, or, you know, like, late night TV, I got no life and this is going to make me millions of dollars. But, like, I like to say, creative investing is not about that. In fact, the more sophisticated you become, the more likely you are to use leverage wisely, like you are. Even though you might be able to afford to be able to flip houses without, you still do it because it enables you to do more houses and to expand your business.
That's correct. Yeah. I also want to point out that if you're in this business long enough, even the best of us are going to have projects where we've made mistakes. I make mistakes every day. So don't think that just because I have a decade plus worth of experience that I don't make mistakes. I do. I've lost money on deals. Quite recently, I'm going to have a deal that's going to be closing. It's in escrow. I'm going to lose 6 figures on the project. And that's pretty sad.
Wow.
It's frustrating, but you got to take your licks. The thing is that I have leverage on these properties. And every single lender on these projects is getting paid back 100% of their principal and 100% of every interest they were promised. And yeah. I think that's a vital importance to point out. If you don't take care of your investors, you're not going to be in business for too much longer, and you're going to create a bad name for yourself.
Hey, Will, and I'm guessing you make it very clear to your lenders that you're taking a 6-figure loss and they are getting every dollar back to remind them that, you know what, despite the fact that I'm bleeding through the pants, you guys are going to be taken care of. And I'm assuming they're going to come and give you money again for the next one, right?
They are well aware of it already. They already know my position. They know the troubles I've had on this property. And I've had pretty much everything that can possibly go wrong with this property, which is hence why I'm losing so much. But they're well aware of it. And yeah, I'd want to say that I just banked private lenders for life. So yeah. I treat lenders like that.
Yep.
And they know you're taking it in the shorts, 6 figures, and they're getting all their money. And they made money. They made more than they even anticipated because it went longer. So they've made even more interest. They're going to be stoked as all hell.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
And that's so important. I mean, that goes to like ties into the reputation thing. I mean, just how much your reputation matters. And I mean, like, especially like during the real estate crash, and I know like life was tough for a lot of people and a lot of investors lost money. Maybe people listening here, you know, so I'm not saying like you're a terrible person, but those people like who, despite losing money, make sure that everyone gets paid off. I mean, it builds your reputation in such a way that it's just very powerful. So I guess maybe that's a bit of encouragement for people listening is, you know, do what you say you're going to do and do it right every time, no matter whether you win or lose or not. Just make sure that everybody who gives you money wins. So.
Yeah. No doubt. Don't screw those people over for sure. And you know, it's such a small industry. I mean, there's millions of people in it, but word spreads fast. I mean, real estate is local. If Will screws over his local lenders, you know, all the local lenders are going to know that he screwed him over and it's a wrap. I mean, he's not going to have access to cash anymore. So
that's right. My reputation is everything. And I've, you know, spent decades building it. Why would I want to ruin it over, you know, screwing somebody out of $100,000? It's not going to do it. So,
yeah. And the same goes, for a new investor. I don't get depressed upon this enough, but the new guys who kind of come out and are like, hey, you know, I'm going to be a wholesaler. I'm going to try this and I'm going to do that. And like, you know, it's okay if I kind of screw up a few times and like, you know, burn a few people or steal deals or whatever it is. Like, that will destroy you. It may work once, but like over the long term, that's not going to work out. If you do crappy work, you name it, like, yeah, you know, anything you do follows you. The contractors who aren't quality aren't getting recommended. You know, the investors are screwing up, aren't, you know, getting referrals, aren't working with other people because they just, you know, you can't screw people over. Your reputation means everything in this business.
Sure.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Right on.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. You're ready to open a business bank account for your new property. You know what that means? Coordinating a time between you, your co-founders, and your bank consultant. Waiting at the branch or waiting for hours on the support line. Who has time for that? With Relay, you can open a business bank account for your property 100% online from anywhere. Create up to 20 accounts to organize money by property or by categories like expenses, taxes, or investments. Effortlessly collaborate with role-specific access. That means giving your cleaner a debit card for cleaning supplies or your accountant read-only access to your transactions. Own multiple businesses? Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access them all from one centralized login. Okay, I'm going off script here. That is cool. It's annoying that I have to log into 10 business accounts with my current bank. So go sign up for RelayFi because that's a feature that I like. No monthly fees or minimums, and it takes just 10 minutes to sign up. Head on over to relayfi.com/biggerpockets for stress-free banking. You can join me because I'm heading on over there right now. I'm heading on over to relayfi.com/biggerpockets. Relay is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Thread Bank, member FDIC. The Relay Visa debit card is issued by Thread Bank pursuant to a license from Visa USA Inc. and may be used everywhere Visa debit cards are accepted.
All right, number six, time.
Yeah, time is your enemy. I've already referenced that several times already on this podcast, but you have to stay on track and make sure that your deal is flowing properly. If you don't, you're losing, you're eating up your profits. So every day that goes by that you waste, you're having new taxes, insurance, utility, interest, maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. And these things add up real fast. So your time is your enemy. So if you need to, when you need to get that acquisition, the day you close, you should already have the dumpster there, already locked and loaded, ready to go. Get your dumpster, your crew in there to demo out everything you're going to demo and start moving forward and just move forward. You're going to have some setbacks. That's going to happen. But where you have setbacks, you try and make up in other spots and catch up here. You know, maybe the drywall team was going to have three guys hanging drywall, and instead you need to save a few days so you have them bring in five, you know, and try and bang it out extra fast. So wherever you can save that time, save it.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the biggest reasons that new flippers screw up is they fail to account for the time value of money. And you know, it is one of the reasons we built the flipping calculator on Bigger Pockets. People could check out at biggerpockets.com/flippingcalc. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think people see these TV shows and they're like, yeah, okay, well, this isn't that hard. We just go and, you know, buy it for X, make repairs and suddenly sell it for Y. What are these holding costs? You know, why would I have to think about the cost of a loan over time, the cost of utilities, keeping the electric on, all these things? Those are the things that you don't think about that just kind of suck you dry, aren't they?
No doubt. And a lot of those shows, they don't go into that fine line detail. They make everything look glamorous and easy and everything's, you know, dramatics. So they got to argue with their contractor and all that BS. When it's all said and done, they leave out a lot of the important factors that go into managing a rehab. And that's one of them.
Yeah. One more thing just to add to that is, you know, this is something that I've been hit with. You've probably been hit with as well. When a flip goes so long, especially in a market that's changing, you know, like if the market doesn't change in a positive way, if it changes in a down way, like the longer your flip goes, the more uncertainty you have. You know, if it takes you a year to flip a house, a lot can happen to a market in a year, and it's not always a good thing. I mean, maybe you get lucky and that market goes up, but maybe not.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And that is a huge factor. And that's why if you need to know your market. So you need to know where your market's going. And if you know that there's a possibility that in 6 months you could have a market correction, it could change from going up to down or from up to flat or from flat to down. You need to know that. And so that you know that you get out. And the other thing is in price, knowing to price your property right. And if you're having trouble selling it, it's better for you to lower that price from 300 to 280 instead of 300 to 295. Go ahead and take that $15,000 loss right off the bat, because if you sell it, you know, a few days after you lower the price, the time you save will eat up a lot of that $15,000 loss. And supposed to dropping it 5,000, then another 5,000, then another 5,000. Now you're back to that 285, and yet you've wasted another month and a half.
Yep. I did that once on a house. I started at 170, went to 165, 60, 55, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30, 25, and sold it at 25. Mm-hmm. Had I just dropped it to 140 or one, you know, like from the 170, I probably would actually sold it there, but I let the market just kept going down and I just,
I was. Or if you dropped it to 125, you had multiple offers and it was exactly. 35.
Yep. Yeah. Been there for sure.
Cool. Yep. We all have, and it's one of those things. So others listening to this podcast can learn from it and hopefully not repeat our mistakes.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
Right on.
All right. Next one. Number seven.
Know each phase of the renovation project and in which order things should be completed. I don't know how many times I've walked into another rehab project and seen things going on where I'm like, why are they doing this when this isn't even done? So, and this is only going to come from experience. So if you're brand new, you're really not going to know what order to do things in. So you're going to have to rely on contractors who are experienced to tell you that. And if you don't believe somebody, then get a second opinion. But make sure that you stay in line and do things in the proper order. I mean, it's terrible if you go in there and you put in your cabinetry and your flooring and you do that before you've gone and painted all the walls, because now you've got to mask everything off. I'm not saying you're not going to ever have to mask, because you will. But what I'm saying is you have a nice clean palette. It's so easy to just prime the whole house, be done. Then you can come in and set in your cabinetry, and then you can do your fine line painting after. It's just those simple processes to do in the right order. It saves you time and it saves you money. Plus, if you do things in the wrong order, you might end up having to rip something out and then redo.
And that's awesome advice. Yeah. I don't think we've actually talked about that in 120 shows. The order of things does matter. So yeah, great bit of feedback, Will. And if people don't know the order, like you said, you know, ask another contractor or just jump on Bigger Pockets. Hey, I've got this rehab. This is, you know, I've got these three or four subs that I'm trying to figure out how to coordinate. What should I do? And people will jump in and help you out. You know, so definitely don't hesitate to utilize the resource.
No question. Yeah, the BP forums are a valuable resource for that.
Great. All right, moving on. Number eight,
dealing with contractors and subs can be difficult. So you have to know how to manage them efficiently and productively.
And this is something that I am not very good at. So Will, tell me how to become better at it.
Yeah, how does anyone do that?
You know, that's a good question. Even today, I have a project in Beverly Hills ongoing, and there's just always something. We talked to the general contractor on here who has subbed out to a stucco company. And the stucco company, we were supposed to put stucco in this portion of the house, and there's going to be some wood fascia in another portion by the entry. So we told him, okay, here's what we're due. Told it to the general contractor. He's supposed to pass that on. Supposedly he has. I'm there yesterday, and the employees of the stucco company are coming up asking, where is the wood going? Where does it stop? Where does the stucco start? I'm like, man, this is stuff I've already gone over the GC with. He should have gone over the stucco. I appreciate them asking me instead of just doing what they think. So by all means, ask. But the point is that now I've got to step in and make sure this is being managed properly. And that's frustrating, but it's part of your job. So get in there and do it. Make sure that you're on the job site. And if you're not on the job site, make sure you have a project manager on the job site every day. Because if you don't, things are going to get done. These subs are going to do whatever they think is best, and it might not be correct.
So, I mean, and I think this is why we always talk about rehabbing a property, flipping a house is a job. This is not, you know, this is not something you can do while, you know, working a 9-to-5.
4-hour work week.
Yeah. What? I'm going to go flip houses for, you know, I mean, you could do live in, right? I mean,
let me throw in one caveat with that, Josh. You can have a 9-to-5 and flip houses, but you're going to do it with a partner. So you're probably the money guy.
No, I'm saying you can't personally do it by yourself.
You're right.
You can. It's just your timelines are going to be crazy. If it's just night and weekends, I mean, you have people that you're trusting that you probably aren't ready to trust unless you've been doing this a long time, you know, starting out and saying, hey, I'm going to flip a house just for fun on the side. I think we'd probably all caution you against, wouldn't we?
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And then this other live in the house while I flip it and fix it and all that stuff. I guess great idea if you're living there yourself and so you're getting some use out of it. And if you live there for 5 years, you sell it, you get that big, huge tax deduction from that to avoid capital gains. However, you're talking about doing one flip very slowly and you're losing the time value of money. rather than do that and trying to do everything yourself and swing this hammer and hang this drywall so you can save $1,000, spend the $1,000, get in and out an extra 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 3 months faster. I don't know how many times I've heard of guys saying, well, I did it myself. I did all the work myself. I saved $10,000. Yeah, but it took you 9 months to finish the project. What would have took me three. In those other 6 months, I could have flipped three more houses. Yeah, so they've lost money.
Hold on. And I hear where you're coming from, but let me stand up and defend those guys. Those guys probably don't have the $10,000 to hire the guy to do the job for them, or they may just want to not, they may not want to be flipping three or four houses at once. And, you know, they may want to be casual. Like, you know, at the end of the day, there's no one correct path, right? I don't ever want to be a full-time flipper like you. Not there's anything wrong with that. I think it's great. I would love that I could do it. It's not something that that's not me, right? So, you know, I may want to be flipping one at a time while I'm in it and kind of working on it. So, you know, I think each situation is going to be different.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong answer here. It's a matter of what do you want? Do you want to just do this on a casual basis and flip one house a year? That's fine. Whatever floats your boat. But if you want to run a business and you want to make it profitable, and you don't have to flip three houses at a time. What I'm saying is flip one house at a time, but do it in 3 months instead of nine. Then go to the next house and flip that one in 3 months and go to the next. That way you're doing 4 a year instead of 1 a year. That's what I'm saying. So you have to make the decision. Yeah, yeah. Do you want to flip houses and make money? Is that your desire? Then make it a business and treat it like a business.
I love that. I think that the huge distinction there, and I talk a lot about that, about the business thing on my blog post. Every blog post I talk about business, but and a lot of it's just the lessons I've learned. Like back on, what was it, show 120, I told my story of how I bought that huge house that I started at 170 and dropped the price all the way down to 125. I flipped that house myself. My wife and I did all the labor ourselves. And I could have probably hired contractors to go in and do that entire flip. Could have been done much better than I could have done it, you know, probably, and they would have been done in a month and a half, 2 months or whatever, versus me taking a year to fix it up. And then the market changed and then all the drama happened. And, you know, it was 2 years of my life that I lost on that property. And in the end, I lost 10 grand in cash. And just because I didn't treat it like a business, that was just, you know, it was my hobby of flipping a house. That'd be fun. I watched the TV shows. It didn't work out. So anyway, I like that story because it was tragic, but moving on.
I like that story because you lost and no, yeah. Just kidding. That's awful. It's
evil, Josh. That's evil.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm a terrible person.
That story will save thousands of people, thousands of dollars. That's why I tell it all the time. Cause I know that like it sucks and it happens, but all right, moving on. Number nine.
Yeah. Put your rehab money in all the right places and know where you can save and where you can't skimp.
How do you know that? How do you know where you can save and where you shouldn't?
Okay, so it's pretty common knowledge in our industry to know that the best money is spent in kitchens and bathrooms, particularly the master bathroom. Like kitchens are huge. If you redo kitchens, you almost can't lose. When you redo kitchens and baths, you're adding major value. Painting is a huge thing. Fresh coat of paint and fresh flooring is always a huge bonus. And it's a great spot to invest the money because you're going to get your capital back and likely with return. The other thing is curb appeal. Front yard, backyard, landscaping, making the front entry look nice. That stuff helps sell houses. And putting that little bit of money in that curb appeal goes a long way. So it not only does it add value to the house, but it helps it sell it quicker. And that's value to you because time's your enemy.
Yeah. And that's true for landlords as well. I mean, people got rental properties. Like there's little things that you can do that make such a huge impact. Like I went to Home Depot the other day to buy a front door for the property I'm working on and, you know, picked out the front door and I had a choice between the $307 one that had like the nice oval round glass in the middle and it looked really, really good, or the $150 one, which was just flat, right? Mm-hmm. With nothing. And so like for an extra $150, I mean, you know, it's a big chunk of money, but that's one of the things, that's the first thing a tenant will see. If I was selling the house, it'd be the first thing that a buyer would see. When I go to sell it someday, because it's kind of a long-term flip, I'm going to sell it in 5 years from now, hopefully, you know, I won't have to replace the door at that point. It's already set for that. So there's those little things that like that curb appeal or that help a property stand out.
Yeah, sure. Even if you got $5 a more month in rent because of that door, you know, over the life of that property, you've made out. And when you resell it, maybe you're going to get a few bucks more for it. So it's money well spent in that curb appeal.
So you're talking about places to spend money. Where shouldn't they spend money? Where do novice flippers tend to put money where they go above and beyond and they may not need to?
You know, it's not so much going above and beyond. Of course, that is a mistake. I don't see that as much. Like, if you're in an area where it's low-end houses and none of the other houses have granite countertops, then you shouldn't be putting granite countertops in either, unless you got some smoking deal where you got some, you know, leftover slabs and you were able to do it for, you know, a few bucks more than what it would have cost for tile or for mica or something. That's okay. Where I'm talking about where most investor rehabbers make mistakes is in shoddy work. Where I'll go in and I'll look at this. I'm like, what the hell were they thinking? And it just stands out like a sore thumb. So when what they were doing is they were trying to cut corners. They're trying to cut corners here, and they've left this just god awful thing. And that shows to buyers. So when they walk through and they see that, I'm like, well, this looks pretty crappy. I wonder what else they skimped on. And once a buyer starts thinking that, you might have probably already lost.
Yeah. Yeah. A good example of that, I'll just, again, throw another example in here. The house I'm working on right now, one of the walls, like the previous owner, somebody tried to patch a bunch of holes, probably, you know, like nail holes that they just took spackling and spackled it all over the wall. It looked terrible. You know, like, you know, some people might take a rattle can and quickly cover it over, or, you know, just leave it and just paint it and hope nobody notices. But, you know, those things stand out. I think it's like a little thing, but to do it right and not try to skimp on, you know, something like that, I think just goes a long way. It cost me an extra few bucks, but in the end, I think it'll make a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. It's those little things too. Nothing bothers me more than walking into a freshly rehabbed house and I look down at an electrical outlet and it's got the old, you know, ivory looking stuff instead of clean white, or it's got a big gap between the thing you can see through the wall. It's because they didn't drywall it all the way down far enough. Little stuff like that is just doesn't cost you much to fix. And yet it makes such an impact to buyers.
Right on. Right.
Yep. The other thing I want to point out is layout of a house. So many times I've walked into a house and just the layout or the kitchen was confined and it sucked. And all it took was opening up a wall, or, you know, getting rid of this doorway and opening this doorway, or moving this wall, making the flow better. When you change the flow of a house from a bad flow to a good flow, or enlarging the kitchen by opening up a wall, or taking down a whole wall so the kitchen is kitchen and family room are all like in one big room now, because that's hugely popular today. That adds so much value, and it's demo work. It's nothing. The costs are minute compared to what you get. So some of the biggest things that you can do in a rehab project are fixing bad rooms, bad layouts, bad design.
Right. Yeah. That's great. Good stuff, Will. All right. Final point here. Number 10, the big one.
The big one. Yeah. Well, you know the saying, you make your money when you buy, but you get paid when you sell. So pricing, staging, marketing, and having the right agent is crucial for a quick and profitable sale. And it just goes without saying, if you're in a nice area and you're doing a higher end home, if you're not staging it, you're not going to get full price for that property. And it's just not going to sell as quick. So staging is key in a majority of those houses. I'm not saying you need to stage every single house, because there's the 1,100 square foot, 3-bedroom, 2-bath cookie cutter. Everyone already knows, here's a living room, here's a dining room. No big deal. You don't need to stage that. It does help, though, to throw in some towels, some soap dishes, make it look, you know, a flower in the kitchen, stuff that doesn't cost you much at all. That's just that light staging. Highly recommend doing that.
Yeah. What I like to do a lot on those, those properties, I even do them on rentals occasionally just to make a property look nicer. I'll go to like Ross or Marshall's, and they always have curtains you can buy for like $2. And they're like nice curtains, but they're like, you know, rejected from Bed Bath and Beyond or whatever. Anyway, I'll still get like 6 or 7 panels of these curtains and go up and put them in like the living room. And I think curtains will soften up a room like almost better than anything else that I can think of.
And it also cuts down on your echo, which helps too.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause you walk through an empty house and that echo, it makes people think cold and not inviting. Yeah. I love the curtain thing. One more tip that I've done and that worked really well for me. I went to like, you know, those rental places you can go rent furniture, like rent to own furniture places that like generally lower income people use. So I went to them and just said, hey, I just want to get this living room set delivered to the house. And he's like, okay, no problem. So I just rented it for 2 months or whatever it was. And they picked it up. I mean, they delivered it there, set it all up, an entire living room and dining room set, and brought it back. And the whole thing cost me, I think, $75 a month or something like that for it for a couple months.
For all that furniture?
Yeah, for all of it.
Wow. And,
yeah, I think it might have been a total a month. Yeah, fantastic. And it cost me hardly nothing. That house sold in like a week. It was the fastest I've ever done because it just looks so good.
Exactly. Oh,
that's great. That's great. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, listen, I mean, these have been some really great tips. What final, you know, words do you have for those people who, you know, might be thinking about jumping into the flipping space? You know, what pearls do you have to offer here? And then we'll jump into our famous four.
Okay. I'd say that a lot of people struggle with a very common feeling, and that's fear. I'm scared to do this, or I might lose money, or don't know if I can do it. And they allow fear to stop them. And once you do that, you've already lost. So you can't be scared to fail. You're going to fail. And it's you know, try again. Somebody knocks you down, you get right back up and you keep on fighting. So you got to get out there and take a swing, because if you don't, you'll never know. And in my book, you've already lost. So you really got to just get out there. But don't go out there and wing it. Have a plan. Create a plan. And if you can't do that on your own, get some help. You got a ton of people on Bigger Pockets that are willing to help you.
Yeah. I love it.
Awesome advice, man. Really, really good. Cool.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to the
famous four.
All right. The famous four. These questions we ask everybody, and we asked you last time back on the first time you were on the show. But let's see if anything changed. So question number one, what is your favorite real estate book?
Oh God, I forgot all these questions and I am unprepared. So,
or do you have a recommendation? I should say, but you don't have to remember your favorite, but do you have a good recommendation of a real estate book?
My favorite real estate book. Well, you know, there's always the cliche Robert Kiyosaki, but more so I recommend that they don't just do the first one, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I recommend that they get into the third one, which is Cash Flow Quadrant. I think it really goes into a lot more detail and really sets your mind on how to think like a business owner instead of an employee. And once you get going on that, it really helps you in your business, particularly when you're starting out. So I would highly recommend that.
You know what's funny about that is, like, I read, you know, Cash Flow Quadrant back right after I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I didn't get it. I mean, I thought it was fine, but like, I never read it again. I didn't really care about it that much. I mean, it was fine. It was a book. But then I was talking to somebody the last week on the phone, and I spent an hour talking to this guy I know, a good friend of mine named Jaron, and in the process, I realized everything I was saying was from Cash Flow Quadrant. I was talking about the four, you know, quadrants, and all of a sudden it clicked in my head that in a weird way, like 7 years after reading it the first time, all of a sudden I was like, I get it. And now like, I'm going to pick that up as I'm on my next, when I finish the current book I'm on, I'm going to read that again, because now it actually makes sense to me. Maybe I wasn't prepared at the time or whatever. So anyway, I get
it's
that.
It's good that you took it in and you actually applied it without even realizing it.
Mm-hmm. I think I did. I think I just never realized, like, yeah, some books are just like that. You just read them and internally you process them, and it just wasn't as flashy as Rich Dad Poor Dad, but I think it's just as important. So cool.
Nice.
All right. What about
business? Should I just disappear? I mean,
shit, I'm going to take your question. What about business?
No, why don't you just stuff it? Let me talk here, Buster.
You stuff it.
All right.
What? Okay.
Will.
Now, boys.
Business books. You know, Brandon's getting greedy these days.
I am. I'll take it all.
Business book. What? Oh, are you not going to answer until he says it? Are you guys in cahoots?
We are in cahoots.
Is that what's going on here? Well, what about business books?
Business books. Not
Brandon,
sure.
Why don't you ask again? Maybe he'll answer it.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, what do you recommend for business books?
All right. It's been fun. It's been nice having you on the show. Until next time, I'm signing off. Will, business books.
I'd probably go back to what I recommended earlier during the show is the Trump Style Negotiations by Ross. I think that is, doesn't matter what business you're in, if you can negotiate, you're going to be a good businessman. So
perfect. That's great. What about hobbies? What are we doing these days for fun? You've got your fam. What else you got going on?
Still playing ball, still play softball. I've got my travel ball team. We just got back from Vegas. We won that tournament.
Oh, cool.
I just played last night in my league. We won the championship there. So I'm still doing that. I love that. That's my exercise. And then the balance is, you know, with my kids. My son plays ball as well, so I'm coaching him. He's got a game today, last game of the season before playoffs. So keeps me really busy with that. So between me doing that and then spending time with my kids, and the rest is with fam. So going out to dinner, going to a movie, things like going out on a boat.
Go Mets.
Awesome. I can't concur on you with that, but okay, I'll let you have.
Go Mets!
All right, final question. What do you believe will set apart successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
I would say the determination to succeed separates those that say, no matter what, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to make this work. And they go out and do it and they apply it in the real world. They're the ones that succeed. You see the people on BP, the ones that have been there for years, that's not just by accident. It's because they made a decision to succeed and they went out and implemented it and did it. And you see a lot of people that were on there and then they're gone. It's because they didn't have that same commitment. So you've got to make that commitment to yourself. And it's not to anyone else. It's to yourself.
Hey, Will, you've been on Bigger Pockets for a long time, and this is not part of the Famous Four, but you know, have you noticed, I mean, clearly you've noticed the staying power typically means somebody on, you know, who's been around BP for a long time and, you know, they're probably still in the biz for the most part. As one of the top posters, and we actually just put out an article where I believe you were one of the folks interviewed, and we had talked about some of our top users of the site. What tips would you have really quick for anyone listening on how Bigger Pockets can help them not just kind of be successful up front, but really, you know, maintain some kind of staying power?
Well, you have to realize that it's a commitment of time. So you can't expect to get on Bigger Pockets, create an account, make a post, make a profile, make one post or two, read a few posts, and be done. It's not going to happen. You have to make that commitment knowing that when you log in and you make that profile, you're logging in for years to come. And if you've got to stay active, you've got to be on the site and not just reading, but engaging the community. You have to make posts. By making posts and asking questions or answering other people's questions, you're creating exposure for yourself and you're building your credibility. That can only be done over time. You can have a great answer to a question and it could be exactly right. If you don't follow that up and do that and repeat that, your credibility hasn't really gained much and your exposure hasn't gained any. So you've got to make that commitment and spend the time on Bigger Pockets and stay active. From me doing that has gotten me friends, private investors, business partners, you name it. And it's from my commitment to staying on BP actively. And it doesn't have to be every day, even though I'm on Bigger Pockets almost every day. But at least once a week, you've got to be on there. So make that commitment to get on there and stay on there.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Hey, so where can people find more information about you besides obviously Bigger Pockets?
Other than Bigger Pockets, you can go to my website at bernardenterprises.com. That's B-A-R-N-A-R-D. Enterprises is spelled out in plural.com.
Awesome, man. Hey, listen, thanks so much for coming back. We really appreciate it. Lots of good advice, lots of good feedback, and much success to you going forward.
Thank you, Josh. If I may, one more thing, the listeners may want me to talk about this. The last time we were on the podcast, which is a couple of years ago, we were talking about my Occupants from Hell
store. Oh, yeah.
And I just want to let the listeners know that a couple years later, I know one of the members, I forget his name, he had a son born basically the same day I closed on that property. His son is several, 3 or 4 years old, 4 years old now, and this still is ongoing. I have a court date later this month, so should finally wrap it up. Hopefully I win this May. Once I do, I can start the eviction process, but it is still ongoing. And what a nightmare. I mean, you can't imagine how many things can possibly go wrong And the thing is, this goes back to what I said earlier. I had a private investor in second position on this property. He was a Bigger Pockets member as well. And I borrowed $80,000 from him with the expectation of throwing that in the rehab and getting it done. And I was never able to do it. He extended the loan, And finally, it was so long, and graciously he did that. But at the end of the day, I just took profits from another property, paid him off all his principal, all his interest. I lost a lot of money on that, but the key was that I paid him back. And so he's happy and, you know, he made money and I will eventually, hopefully, maybe get my money back. Who knows? It remains to be seen.
Wow.
Hopefully. Well, and if people don't know what we're talking about there, this will just give me a plug. We'll end it with, go back and listen to Will's first show. I mean, you'll learn a ton about Will's story, where he came from, how he got started. And that is at biggerpockets.com/show32. Again, biggerpockets.com/show32 for that one. But of course, today, this is the Bigger Pockets Show 130, which you can get at biggerpockets.com/show130. And we'll have links there. And you can get in touch with Will, ask him questions, pick his brain, all that right there in the show notes in the comments section. So with that, Josh, you want to take us out?
Will, thanks so much for being on board once again.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Thanks, Will.
Cool. Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Will Bernard. Thanks again to Will for some amazing tips, some really, really good advice. We definitely appreciate it. And of course, congrats on that $1 million flip. Not a lot of people can say they've gone and flipped a $1 million property. So big props to Will on that. Otherwise, guys, thanks for listening. Please be sure to leave us ratings and reviews on iTunes. That is really helpful to us. We really appreciate it when you do. Otherwise, get in there, get together with guys like Will, connect with him, learn from him, you know, partner with him. The way you do that, get involved in our forums. It's free. It costs you nothing. And all you got to do is devote some time, commit yourself. Say, I'm going to spend 5 minutes a day. I'm going to spend, you know, an hour a week jumping in, helping people out, getting involved in the conversation. By doing that, you build up credibility within the community. People who don't know you get to know that you know what you're talking about and are likely to want to work with you. So jump in there, make moves, make it happen, get involved. And otherwise, if you're not already, you know, please follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on G+, on LinkedIn, Pinterest. We even have an Instagram account. Get out there, support Bigger Pockets by following us and help share what we've got. Share our content, share our community through these social media, you know, platforms. We do appreciate it. That's all I got for you, man. One last happy birthday to you before we go, Brandon.
Thank you.
I see the wrinkles, man. I mean, in the last like hour plus or minus, I mean, you're really starting to look haggard.
Yeah, I was going to go get my mothballs out of storage and put on some penny loafers.
Excellent. Excellent. You just pissed off another 10,000 people. Nicely done.
No problem.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, guys. This is Josh Dorkin signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.